The hour of 10:15 having arrived, we will call the House Tax Committee to order. We will just double check here, make sure we have a quorum before we officially get going. But welcome back to the Tax Committee. And I would like to make a few introductions before we get into the work of the day. First of all, we have a quorum. Okay, so we've got a couple bills up there we're going to be looking at today. We have House File 2276, a con bill, House File 2461, a quam bill. And before we get into the agenda for the day, I'd like to make sure that we kind of know who we are around here. I'd like to, who are the pages for the committee this year? If you could introduce yourself, why don't you come to the mic here and state your name and previous employment or where you went to college or
All right, my name's Ryan. I am the page for this tax committee. I've worked many different jobs. I worked here 3 years ago, worked for State Government Finance, Veterans Affairs, Environmental Policy Committee, and helped out in Legacy. You know, I went to community college for a few years, decided to stop for a little bit and try to figure out what I'm going to do. So, you know, I'm kind of trying to figure out what I'm trying to do with my life. So,
well, this is a good place.
Yeah, exactly.
This is a good place to figure it out. Other pages we have. Okay, the committee page now. Partisan research for the Republicans. We have Gary Kay. And then who's our DFL research? Do you want to join us at the table here? You're certainly welcome. Okay. Well, I know you're okay, but
she's
okay. Well, I'll take your lead on that, Representative Lesh. Well, so we again want to welcome everybody to the Tax Committee. Let's start out. We'll do the minutes. Representative Simonson will be moving the minutes in just a little bit here. Okay. We are waiting for a quorum, but we will start with the con bill. So when we do have a quorum, I'll be moving the con bill. And Representative Kahn has an announcement as to something she has provided the committee. Welcome to the Tax Committee.
Mr. Chairman and members, I understood it's a tradition that if the first time you're appearing before this committee, you're expected to provide treats. Fortunately, the people working on this bill remembered that. They didn't depend on me to remember it. So we have exceptionally good treats, and that's, and I have to put a personal comment, that's from the Vietnamese bakery on University Avenue, and I will never eat croissants usually except in Paris or Montreal, but these ones actually meet those standards. So,
well, thank you, and just so you know, the tax rule generally you have to bring treats if your first bill, if you're a freshman. Close enough. Okay.
Well, we figured the honor of having the first bill be a bill by a Democrat to show the bipartisan nature of this session warranted treats.
And I think
it's my first bill before a tax committee.
And thank you so much, Representative Kahn. And that is our tradition, as you know, in the Tax Committee. We always, in all the committees I've ever run, we've always heard the DFL bill first. And not one that we can hear and not support, but I think this is one hopefully we can hear and get behind. But we probably should hear the bill first. So,
Mr. Chairman, if I may, on the
chair,
treats, I used to do the same thing when I chaired the Education Committee. And Harry Mayers, you may remember, was on the committee. And he brought treats in one morning from Green Bay, Wisconsin. You remember, he was a big Packer fan and so on. So he held the record for the greatest distance for where the treats came from.
Treats?
I think he had them flown in or something.
Okay, so with that, we do have a quorum. I'll officially call the meeting of the House Tax Committee to order. Representative Simonson has read the minutes in full and moved the minutes. Any comments or additions or corrections to the minutes? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Simonson. Okay, so with that, Representative Earhart.
Well, Mr. Chairman, on the way in here, Representative Joskowski and I were talking. We've been anxiously waiting you to start cutting taxes, and when are you going to get started on that?
Well, Representative Earhart, it starts right now. Okay, so with that, I don't know if you want to bring the treats to the table or...
I think they should be.
You think so? Yeah.
Here first.
Yeah, let's bring the treats to the table here. And where's the new page? Somebody should inform him of procedure here. That'd be me first. I mean, we have to have some decorum here.
Well, he wants to learn what he's doing in life.
He came to the right place. Oh, my.
Whoa.
So what else is it? What does everyone else think
of? Oh, they're so good and so good for you.
Yes.
I just took one. I didn't know that.
Oh, my gosh. Where do we start? We have to take care of serious business here first. Okay, so welcome to the committee, Representative Kahn. I will move House File 2276. We'll hear the bill and then lay it over for possible inclusion. And, again, members, we won't, unless we hear from leadership, the bills we hear will all be laid over for possible inclusion. We're not looking at... moving anything to the floor that has tax implications at this time. And before we get going, so I'll move House File 2276. Representative Kahn, do you have any amendments? Or
yes,
okay.
Mr. Chairman, there's an A1 amendment to House File 2276 to get the bill in its proper form.
Okay, and as a courtesy, generally, we just do that for authors. So I will move the A1 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. We have the bill in the shape the author liked. But before... Well, I'll hold off on that. Okay, Representative Kahn, two-year bill as amended.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's a strong bipartisan gesture from the chair to begin the work of this with a bill authored by a member of the DFL. And to continue in that spirit, I'm bringing you a non-controversial bill that should receive bipartisan support from members of this committee. The reason that we needed, so House File 2276, as amended, provides a modest tax credit to an innovative public-private partnership that will connect area employees to an untapped pool of talent by providing workforce and education services to the Cedar Riverside neighborhood. And it follows investments that have been made by Hennepin County, the City of Minneapolis, and also commitments from the largest employers in the area. So I have two testifiers with me this morning, Minneapolis Councilman Abdi Warsami and Lewis Smith from the Cedar Riverside Partnership, to both speak very briefly to the bill. And there are others available to answer questions if necessary. And the reason we had to change the bill originally, it was supposed to go into a historic building, so we were working on a historic credit issue, but the site changed with the creation of new buildings in the area, which is why the bill had to be changed from how it was introduced. And yes. Can I bring my testifiers?
Thank you, Representative Kahn. Yeah, if you could, the testifiers could please come forward. And please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
My name is Abdul Wasami. I'm a council member of the City of Minneapolis, representing Ward 6.
Welcome, committee, sir.
Thank you, Chair.
My name is Lewis Smith, and I'm counsel for the Cedar Riverside Partnership.
Welcome to the tax committee, sir. Either one, please proceed.
Mr. Chairman and members, we're grateful for this opportunity. I just want to tell you that this initiative is the product of a public-private partnership. The Cedar Riverside Partnership includes Augsburg College, it's chaired by Augsburg's President Paul Privino, St. Catherine University, the University of Minnesota, Fairview Health Services, Sherman Associates, as well as our public partners, the City of Minneapolis, Hennepin County, Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board, and a number of other community organizations. The partnership's number one priority is this Opportunity Center, and they are committed to raising a total of $1.5 million to make this a reality. We're very grateful that Hennepin County's leadership has resulted in a commitment of $250,000, as well as the City of Minneapolis's commitment of $100,000. We have great partners with Minneapolis Community Technical College and Emerge, and we're knitting together a hybrid of services for workforce readiness and library services. The fundamental job here is to create pathways for employment for young people in the Cedar Riverside neighborhood, and we have great commitments from leading employers like Fairview to actively recruit into their workforce. So we think this represents a great investment of public resources that leverage even more in private resources and, most importantly, in employment opportunity for young people in Cedar Riverside. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I think we'll take testimony from the next witness. Councilman Wasami?
Yes. Thank you, Chair Davis and members of the committee. I represent this area, and we have a problem with unemployment and underemployment. And the Opportunity Center, or the Opportunity Hub, will tackle this issue. It will create a center to develop skill sets and stimulate job growth. It will halve the unemployment rate, and it will connect people looking for work to employers. And thank you for giving us the opportunity.
Thank you, sir. Is there anyone from the audience that wishes to testify on behalf of this bill or with concerns? Okay, then we'll go to member questions. Are there any member questions? Chair Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kahn, are we setting a precedent here, or can you give us examples, although you haven't served on the tax committee probably recently, but examples of when we've done this previously?
Representative yes. Kahn?
As I've said, I'm usually used to spending money, not taxing it, or figuring out ways to relieve taxing from it. But if we are setting a precedent, it's a really good precedent, because it's a public private it's a public private partnership that will help an area that has very serious employment problems, and an area with lots of immigrants that has education issues and that kind of thing. I think the thing that's particularly important about this is that there is a community center. This is right across the street from the community center, which is in the area. The community center really only serves people up to age 18. And this program is moving into the next set of people that need hope, which is kind of 18 to 24.
So, Chair Erickson?
Again, these people know much more about it than I do.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Perhaps Mr. Michael could enlighten us a bit as to how many times we may have done this or if this is a precedent.
Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, members of the committee, I don't think there's a precise direct precedent for this, but what the proponents of this are relying on is that there's sort of an analogous state credit for historic rehabilitation that, you know, if the building were on the register or in a historic district, it would qualify for this sort of thing. And in the tax bill that's in conference committee, there was an exception created for a similar facility on the north side in a historic building that did not qualify for the federal credit, but that the committee authorized to do this for. And in fact, the Senate bill has a grant for this actual same facility in it. So that's sort of the background or context.
Thank you, Mr. Michael, and thank you, Mr. Chair, just so we have that background.
Chair Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Kahn, for bringing this forward. And I just a question in the discussion about a number of community partners that seem to be interested. I noticed most of them sounded like nonprofits or governmental entities, but were there multiple private partners interested in this project, or was it the hope that this tax credit would bring multiple or more of them in?
Mr. Smith?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Loon. The most significant private partner is Fairview Health, which hires thousands of people in its workforce, and the nearby University of Minnesota Medical Center and Children's Health Facility. We have a number of other healthcare partners that are a part of this, but not formally in the partnership. The University of Minnesota is a significant employer, as well as Augsburg, who are also committed to hiring from this Opportunity Center.
Chair Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kahn, first of all, I'd like to thank you for that croissant. It was by far the best I've ever had.
Yes, and it's right down on University.
Good. Yes, yes. I'll visit them often. Two-part question. Is the building privately held? Is it a private building owned by an individual? And then the second part is, how long do you anticipate the job training center to be in that structure?
Councilman Wasami?
The building is owned by Fine and Associates. So it's a multi-purpose building. So there's apartments at the top, and it has like 5,000 square feet at the bottom where the Opportunity Center will be housed. And the aim is to have it for long term. And the fiscal agent is Hennepin County. So the county will be the fiscal agent that will run the day-to-day operations of this space.
Richard McDonald?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So is there a stipulation as to how long this will be used for the job training? I think we all recognize the importance of the Rehabilitation Center and job training, as it does for folks in the Cedar Riverside or all over the metro area. But would there be a stipulation of, if you're going to use some tax credit, tax monies, how long that can be used for this center? Let's say in 2 years, there's another building built, and no longer will you have that facility training there. And then it's not a very good investment for the taxpayer at that point.
Mr. Smith?
Mr. Chairman, Representative McDonald, yes, we've been alert to that question. Hennepin County is committing a lease agreement of a starting term of 10 years, and it can be renewable for another 10. And I think this is a very long-term commitment by the county to the space and this Opportunity Center.
Representative McDonald?
That's good. Thank you. I'll just one last question then.
Sure. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And how many folks are trained per year on an average?
Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Sure. Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, I'm John Thorson with Hennepin County, and I coordinate workforce development at the county. The partners that are coming together for this to provide these services, Emerge Community Development, currently provides services in the neighborhood, and we're bringing other partners that are providing service in the neighborhood right now and creating a locus point for doing that. The need in the neighborhood is high. Unemployment in these census tracts in Cedar Riverside is about 17.8%, and among youth 18 to 24, or 16 to 24, it's over 48%. Our goal is to have cut that in half within 2 years.
Representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would you perhaps report back in a year and let us know if you did indeed cut that in half?
We'd be very pleased. Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, we'd be very pleased to.
Representative McConnell?
Very good. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wasn't sure about the procedure that you wanted to use, but if you want a motion at some point to adopt the A1 amendment or otherwise on the bill, I'd be glad to do that since Representative Kahn isn't a member.
The A1 amendment has been moved and adopted.
Oh, has it? Okay.
Thank you. Representative Drazkowski. Oh, okay. Other questions for members? Okay. Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one last question. I don't know the area exceptionally well. How close is this to a college town?
It's 2 blocks. It's 2 blocks from University of Minnesota. Two and a half blocks from Augsburg College.
Okay, thank you.
Gentleman from Lyon? Any other questions? Okay, with that, we will lay this bill over for possible inclusion as House File 2276 as amended with the A1 amendment. Thank you very much, Councilman Wasami, Mr. Thorson, Mr. Smith, and Representative Kahn. Thank you very much. Okay, item next. And just while we're getting Mr. Quam to the table here with his witnesses and so forth, one thing that we'll be looking at on the committee, and I'm sure you're all going to be looking at very closely with me, is we've got the bill in conference committee. We're going to be hearing bills that members have, different things they need to be looking at.
Sure.
So the question is, how do we get some of those items? You know, what I'm going to be looking for is there an attachment to the current conference report? It looks to me on this one like one could argue there is. It's in the Senate bill, so it's been heard. So that kind of meets that qualification. But as I was asked by Leader Thiessen on the floor 2 days ago, we'll be following House rules very, very closely, but a lot of times we're going to have bills that people are really going to want, and the question is how do we get them to the governor? And so I'm going to be looking very closely. Did the House or the Senate pass like language, similar language, exact language, whatever. This one, I think, shouldn't be a problem, but we're not going to want to necessarily have a second tax bill on the House floor. What could possibly go wrong with that? So it would be my intention to follow the House rules very, very closely. I think this one, I'll be taking input from all members of the committee. This one probably, if the committee later on decides to go with it, could probably be pulled into conference the way it looks to me. So I'm going to be kind of every bill we talk about, has it been passed? Do we meet House rules that it was through one of the committees or one of the bodies and passed off through the floor in some omnibus bill? So I'll certainly be taking members' input on that whenever input is necessary. Chair Carlson.
So, Mr. Chairman, how are you going to handle the brand-new issue under the rules, then, if you don't want to have any tax bills going through the floor?
Well, I think what's...
Because under both joint rules and House rules, you know, it has to be, as you just pointed out, something that's either same as or at least similar to qualify to be inserted in a conference committee report.
Thank you, Chair Carlson. What I'm looking at is if there are some issues that really need to be done, and if we can get agreement from leadership, from all caucuses, the minority in the House and Senate, the majority in the House and Senate, then I could see something moving forward. If we're going to have some bills where there's going to be 8,000 to 10,000 amendments offered, I'm not really interested in that. So I'm hoping that for a second tax bill to meet the House rules through all the proper committees off the House floor, there'd need to be some agreement. And so I don't think we're going to have a whole lot of real controversial type issues going that way, because obviously members are going to want to offer amendments there. So that's how I would see it going forward. And I'll be happy to talk to you further and any member of the committee further on how we might do that, because there's some important issues that have come to my desk that I'm struggling with every day to see how do we get this to conference and abide by House rules. So that's very important to me.
Chair Carlson. One of the reasons I raised that question on a personal basis, I have a bill that was introduced and sent to this committee the first day of session that's a brand new issue, not a maybe a bit complex, but it's not a hugely controversial one. But I was also asking the question in a more general way, you know, because there would be other bills perhaps like that that have not passed one body or the other. But it sounds to me like you're going to have some conversations, too, with the Senate on that.
Absolutely. Yes, that's correct. Representative Loft.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, as a become their tradition, Congress passed some more tax changes in the end of the last year, and people are filling out their tax forms right now, and the House has traditionally been the leader on dealing with tax conformity issues. How do you see that fitting in the process that you've just defined?
That is a very, very good question, and we do have the department here. We do have a resource person from the department. Mr. Cummings, welcome back to the Tax Committee, by the way. And staff or whoever, if I don't say this just right, let me know, hit me or something. I work quite a bit with Commissioner Bowerly on this very issue because it's a very, very important issue. And I would say we've come to the conclusion that this is something that will probably be done in May if we can get there, if we can do whatever we're doing as far as conformity, whatever the committee agrees to, and we would move out of here. And when we start March 8th, and a lot of people already filed their taxes by March 8th, and Mr. Cummings, why don't you come to the table quick on this one? I don't want to say anything that's out of school here. But what we're looking at is, in my conversations with the department, is that if there is a bill passed in May that has conformity in it, then what they would be able to... I don't really think the department wants us to do a conformity bill right today, because a lot of people have filed their taxes, a lot of people have not filed their taxes. From what I understand it, it would be filing tax deadline would be done. And if we would do a conformity bill, then they can, I'm going to just say, flip a switch, and everybody at once would be treated with what the new conformity is. Now, it's not quite that easy, but Mr. Cummings.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, as it relates to federal conformity, there were a number of federal tax provisions that have passed in the last year. some of which were very small and some of which were a little larger. I know there were a few tax provisions in the Bipartisan Budget Act, and then there was many more provisions passed in the PATH Act, which was passed in December. This was a federal conformity package that included many provisions, and some of which were extended for 2 years, some of which were extended for 5 years. There were some modifications that happened related to some of the depreciation provisions. So the federal update is a little different than it has been in the past. Usually, Mr. Chair, we want to make sure that any federal update provisions that happen before or as close to the beginning of the filing season as possible. And so with you, Mr. Chair, and I know previous chairs, we have surely appreciated the quick work that has happened in January to pass any federal conformity packages so that our taxpayers can be have the most limited effect as possible. But a similar circumstance in 2014, Mr. Chair, in which session started very late and there was a federal conformity package that was attempted to be done early. It's still, just because of what it takes to pass the House and the Senate, it took a few weeks. And it got to the point where we really got up to, you know, almost April, the end of March and April, before it was passed. Most taxpayers had already filed. And then we also had TurboTax and other sort of people that work as intermediaries to help people file their taxes. They have to change their software and update their software, and it got to the point where taxpayers maybe were a little more confused. The internet service providers, we were told by one person, not the internet service providers, that's a different bill, but the the tax software that helps taxpayers, one person said that he retired because of the federal conformity package in 2014. So that was too late for a federal conformity package to pass. So what could happen this year, Mr. Chair, if it does pass in May, past the filing season, is that the vast majority of taxpayers that would be impacted by a federal conformity package, we would be able to automatically adjust their return in order to make sure that they took the benefits that they would have. We are making sure that in our questions we have a M1NC non-conforming. So we are asking the questions in order to ensure that in the cases where we can adjust their returns and make sure we're getting it back to them. In addition, Mr. Chair, there are some other provisions, some of the depreciation provisions, where taxpayers will have to file an amended return. But we're trying to ensure that that's the minority. With all this said, I know that the House has yet to put together a budget. The governor is still going to release his budget, so I don't want to preempt any discussions that go on related to that.
And thank you very much, Mr. Cummings. And I would say that this is probably a hearing for another day very soon. And just so members know, I am meeting with the department today, and we have several meetings scheduled throughout the next few weeks. How's everything with the Atwater, Cosmos, Grove City Falcons?
Mr. Chair, they are doing fantastic, so thank you for...
Go Falcons.
Go Falcons.
Chair Drazkowski and then Dabney. Chair Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Cummins, I was kind of confused. You had mentioned that there was going to be a budget discussion set. I thought that we have resolved the budget as of last year, and the budget is balanced and government is funded. Is that correct?
Mr. Cummings?
Mr. Chair, as of February 26th, I know that there was an announcement that there was a budget surplus of about $900 million, and I know that that will be a topic of discussion for the next few months. So I know that there's a supplemental budget that gets put together by both the House and the Senate as well as the governor. So I didn't want to preempt any discussion of a supplemental budget by anybody, including the governor, about federal conformity. So I just wanted to talk about the implications of what a federal conformity package may, if if it was included in the House or the Senate or the Governor's package, what the implications of that might be.
Chair Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Cummins. Members, government's here asking for more of the people's money.
Chair Dabney.
Well, Mr. Chair, or, Mr. Cummins. A federal conformity package would be that is tax benefits that would be going back to taxpayers, their depreciation provisions. They help make the tax code simpler. Mr. Chair, if there's a difference between the federal tax package and the federal tax code and the state tax code, it becomes much more complicated for taxpayers to file. And in addition, some of the provisions that were passed last December are benefits that taxpayers could receive. So the inclusion or exclusion of any sort of provisions in federal conformity, you know, it is nothing to do with the Department of Revenue coming in. So I just wanted to make that clear, Mr. Chair.
Chair Drazkowski. Chair Dabney. Thank you. Then I think we'll go to the actual bill we have before us. And I don't want to be cutting anybody off here, but we will get to Representative Crom's bill. We'll have a few more questions, and then this discussion will continue. This is an ongoing thing. Chair Dabney and then Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, the conversation between Chair Drazkowski and Mr. Cummins here was a good segue, because it is about a sense of urgency around the tax conformity issues. I received an email this morning pointing out an issue that I'd not tracked, but the Feds apparently extended, I've got the language in front of me, but the Mortgage Forgiveness and Debt Relief Act for, I believe it's another year, meaning those who had to sell their homes in a short sale last year are protected from having to pay income taxes on the gap between what the mortgage was and what they finally resolved and sold the home for. So if we don't act on tax conformity, these folks could have several thousand dollars in tax liability to the state of Minnesota that I would certainly argue they shouldn't. I've got to guess that Chair Drazkowski might agree with me on that. I'm not sure. But it would mean they'd be paying less, and these are folks who presumably are strapped to begin with financially, or they wouldn't have sold the house on a short sale. So asking these people to fill out their tax forms, pay this, you know, readjust their gross income after doing the federal form for the state form, pay state income taxes on that, and then maybe later we'll come back and comply and you'll get a larger refund. You're asking folks who are short money to begin with to just pay us and hope. And I guess I've got a different sense of urgency than that. And I would encourage the committee to have the same.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Representative Dabney. Representative Chair Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I don't want to jump into the Republican politics here, but...
I don't either.
I do hear that as a member of the Ways and Means Committee, which several of us are members of, and I have not talked directly to Chair Knobloch, but I do hear that you are considering a House budget resolution. In the second year of the biennium under the rules, that's optional, but you would pass a budget resolution if you were planning on having some appropriation-related bills. And I assume one that your caucus has talked openly about in terms of the need would be the bonding bill, you know, whatever you're going to put in there for debt service and so on. Would be one of the reasons that you'd have a budget resolution, but there apparently are conversations in some quarters about having a House budget resolution, and I do want to repeat, just so everybody understands, that first year of the biennium, we're required to have a budget resolution. Second year of the biennium, it's optional, and I can only recall, I think, one time where we didn't have a budget resolution the second year, but... there's staff here that maybe recalls some of that better than I do, but it would appear that you're on the road of doing something.
Okay.
Being in the minority, I don't know what you're going to do, but you're going to do something, I understand.
Okay, with that, let's move forward. Mr. Cummings, didn't mean to put you on the spot today. Good job. Thank you, and we'll see you this afternoon.
Happy to be a resource, Mr. Chair.
You're a great resource. Go Falcons. Representative Quam, Byron Bears. Okay. I will move House File Number 2461 for possible inclusion in a possible omnibus tax bill. We have a DE1 amendment. I will move the DE1 amendment. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. We now have the bill as amended, and I should state for the record that I think I did that on the last public con bill. That was as amended. Okay, so we have House File 2461 as amended by the DE1 amendment before us. Representative Palm, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr.
Present your bill, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and esteemed and honored members of the Tax Committee. This bill started from a conversation with a constituent and built with conversation with other constituents, even in, at county fairs and phone and email. And basically, we hear broadband as being a key to this state's vitality. We hear proposals for hundreds of millions of dollars for grants and other activities to try and promote this. And this bill is saying, we've got programs out there that have worked for local telephone, giving a tax benefit of not having to pay a tax. So this would be sort of a tax cut to earlier discussion and help promote the organic growth across the state where there's a need, desire, and capability to expand the internet and broadband. The DE amendment was generated with discussions with nonpartisan staff in order to be more clear, and there in the fiscal note activity there was a desire to be even more clear as to what might be entailed, and I think that should be defined with discussions in committee. But frankly, Utah and other states have been fertile grounds for many startups and internet activities. They've seen benefits of employment, but they've also seen where people can stay in their community, not have to move to a large metro area for a job. You have less need for the transit roads, and you have a vibrance that stays with the local communities. Now, this started small, and then through discussions with people in the Minnesota High Tech Association, and then very recently with the Minnesota Telecom Alliance, there seems to be a lot of desire for this type of bill, this activity to show Minnesota's ready to be more welcoming to companies doing internet and broadband activity. And so there should be a letter from the Minnesota High Tech Association. And at the table is John Dukic. And Brent Christensen. John is with the Minnesota High Tech Association, and Brent is with the Minnesota Telecom Alliance.
Okay, gentlemen, welcome to the committee. Who would like to go first?
I'll start.
Mr. Dukic, welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, John Dukic with the Minnesota High Tech Association. We're an association of 300 science and technology companies throughout the state of Minnesota, and represent those companies, including some broadband and internet providers, and are supportive of this legislation.
Okay, so members, you should have in your packet from the MHTA, and that's who you're with, Mr. Dukic?
Correct, yes. There is a letter in the packet from our president and CEO, Margaret Anderson Kelleher, in support of this legislation.
Would you please give her my best?
I will certainly do that.
Thank you very much. I've got a lot of respect for Ms. Kelleher. Okay, with that, Mr. Christensen, please state your name. Do you represent for the record, please, sir?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Brent Christensen, and I'm with the Minnesota Telecom Alliance. And we're a trade association that represents broadband providers throughout the state of Minnesota. We are in support of this bill because our members are the ones that deploy broadband, and this goes to the bottom line and allows us to deploy more broadband. So we are in very strong support of this bill, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Christensen. Is there anyone from the audience that wishes to testify on behalf of or with concerns on this bill? Okay, with that, we'll go to member questions. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it seems like the letter from the High Tech Association and the original bill really was focused on machinery and equipment and poles and the kinds of things that you need to get broadband out to new areas. And I think we all want to see broadband be available to all, including in the metro area. But when I look at the amendment, it broadens it much more greatly to also include people, an internet service provider providing website building, cloud storage, virtual hosting, data processing, and information services. And this seems to me to go beyond access to broadband to anyone who's operating an IT-related business and any equipment that they might use in their, they may be in a city with absolutely excellent broadband and just be buying new computers to do their work. Am I misunderstanding the amendment in terms of how it, what these additional website building hostings, et cetera, are? And I see Ms. Dalton's prepared to explain.
Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, Representative Loeffler, the bill does include ancillary services provided by an internet service provider, but you must first be an internet service provider. The reason it's done, the bill was drafted this way, is because it's trying to eliminate some line drawing that might occur with, is this server used 50% for internet access, or is it also used for cloud, accessing cloud storage, or is it used for web hosting? It's getting into, these lines aren't always firm lines, and often the same equipment might be used for not only just providing the internet access, but also providing ancillary services that go along with that internet access. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's drafted that way. Having said that, I do want to say I know just enough about internet access and internet service provider provision to be dangerous. And this is something that really needs to be worked out with the industry to make sure that, you know, the definitions are actually matching what they're trying to do, and that there's a definition of machinery and equipment that matches what they're trying to do.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My knowledge may not be much more than Ms. Dalton's on the industry itself. My vision was just that it could be used by others who might buy service from some broadband company and then remarket it as an internet service provider and then have this as another route forward. But I have total confidence that Ms. Dalton will continue to expand her knowledge with the industry on this and will have a good policy going forward.
Mr. Chair, the current law covers equipment for telecommunications and pay television machinery, and as with technology changing, there's been quite a few advances, and by trying to have this less siloed, it would allow us for more latitude as technology, evolves.
No, that's all. Thank you.
Representative Simonson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm wondering if the Department of Revenue can comment on the provisions in this bill. And I'm just looking at the fiscal note, which isn't done yet. But I'm just curious about their interpretation in the, and I'm looking at the DE1 amendment, the definition that's provided in the language about what an internet service provider is, and if that makes sense to them and how they would apply this particular tax credit.
Thank you, Representative Simonson. We have our resource from the department here. If you could, you heard the Simonson question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Simonson, for the record, my name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the tax policy manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. To the question, we were interested in attending this hearing because we were also trying to learn more about what type of line drawing was intended. Some of the types of things that we were asking, that we are sort of thinking about and asking about, are definitions related to what are these types of items in the economy, and that's something that we look forward to continuing to work with House staff and the industry on if this is something that continues to move forward. So part of this is, and as you can see from the revenue estimate, is just a better understanding of what is in and what is out and what is defined here. And that, and to that point, Mr. Chair, at this point, we didn't have a firm enough handle on what types of things were in and out in order to provide an estimate. But as this provision continues to move forward, we can continue to work on the estimate and the assumptions related to what is in this bill.
Representative Simonson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate your response, but I think it was almost as vague as the language in the bill. Do you think that the language in the bill is specific? And here's where I'm getting at is we're defining what an internet service provider is. It's an individual or a company that provides access to the internet. That's pretty clear. And other related services such as da 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 da. Is that clear enough to you as we go forward? And I'll have a follow-up question too, Mr. Chair, but is that clear, or do you think that language should be tightened up as to what the definition of an ISP is?
Mr. Cummings.
Mr. Chair, what I'd like to do is, and maybe this is the best way to do this, is we can go back and provide some specific questions to the chair and to the committee in terms of what would be needed in order to continue to make sure that we understand the bill. But at this point, I don't want to go into specifics on something that I know that there's been many discussions within the last 3 days from staff within our department in order to try and better understand the definitions. And I would want to make sure that I'm representing that as accurately as possible before I would give an answer on this.
And Mr. Cummings, you could refer those questions to our internet expert, Ms. Dalton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Cummings. And I appreciate that answer. And I mainly wanted to draw attention to it because this is the type of bill that has the opportunity perhaps to gain support and end up passing at some point in time. I could see that happening. But my final question, Mr. Chair, is for the bill author. And it has to do with, who we're providing tax credits to as we go forward, in particular in this industry. I think, as you know, Representative Quam, a lot of the discussion about access to the internet and broadband overall has to do with, the quality of the service, the speed, both up and down, and the availability of the bandwidth. So, I'm wondering if it had crossed your mind or what your thoughts are about, providing some sort of a threshold in defining what an internet service provider is that would be that would have access to a tax credit. Should it be tied to the state speed goals, or should it be tied to some other performance factor? I'm just curious what your thoughts are on that.
Representative Palm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. Over a decade ago, I worked designing and developing fiber optic transceivers and telecom hardware, backbone type stuff. And I've seen how these things have changed. And that's part of the reluctance of being too tight with the language, because in 6 months, that technology is out of date and it's the next thing. But still being definitive enough to where it's sector and application-based as opposed to too loose. And I am very open to working with staff and the departments and the association to better clarify, without handcuffing, the creativity that this sector, tends to see. So definitions of download, upload speeds, they change depending on what entity you talk to. So I'm very open to having pluggability to an agency, so you're not spending on old equipment, but I don't think people want to buy old equipment. So it's the newer, faster, but by the time you put it in law and pass it, it's out of date. And that's part of the problem. So I stand committed to working with people to get a usable version of this, but let's get Minnesota, up and going and competitive.
Simonson. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Quam. And Mr. Chair, I would just encourage you, perhaps, if this is something that you're going to consider as you go forward, that we have that discussion about, who we're providing the tax credit to make sure that it's getting to the right place.
Thank you, Representative Simonson. Any other questions for Mr. Christensen or Dukic or the author?
Representative Erickson. Chair Erickson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Quam, is this for you a fairness issue? And if so, can you give us a specific example and then what the benefit would be for their getting this exclusion like occurs with the telecom industry and pay television?
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. It is sort of a fairness, but it gets into, I dropped off to my L.A. the newest Yellow Pages. And we joked about the fact that to some generations, they don't really understand Yellow Pages. But it's a related, you know, now it's the Internet and everything else, so that's related. The way technology moves, it's more of trying to keep in touch with, the original intent was to allow telecom services and, you know, also the pay-per-view, you know, the cable-type services to greater Minnesota and outside the metros. I don't know what the next service might be around the corner. And so the idea is to update and make tax code more amendable to our ever-changing economy. And I feel this is fair and in the same intent which the original code was generated, and that there'd be benefit for a vast portion of the state.
Chair Erickson.
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Quam, is Yellow Pages your example then? Or is Yellow Pages, to me, archaic? So how does that fit into this as an example? Or did I miss something?
Thank you. Excuse my poor attempt at humor, but it was to illuminate.
Representative Quam.
Mr. Chair, it was meant to illuminate that something that was part of the mainstay, is not so much the mainstay. It's still there. And so the tax benefit here, exemption,
okay,
was made in the past for what was mainstay, mm-hmm, and now mainstay is broadband and the Internet.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Some further questions from members for Representative Quam? Okay, then I will move to layover House File 2461 as amended for possible inclusion in a tax bill. Anything else for the good of the order? Thank you very much, members. Good government all the time. We are adjourned.